This is exclusive access into the heart of racing. The Racing Pulse Inner Sanctum.
And it is great to welcome into the Inner Sanctum the chairman of Racing Victoria, Brian Kruger. How are you, Brian?
I'm well, thanks, Michael. How are you?
Great to see you. Thank you. 10 months in the job. That seems like it's gone quickly. How does it seem like it's gone for you?
Yeah, some days I wake up and it feels like it's gone quickly, and other days I wake up and it feels like it's been a few years. So there's certainly been a lot happening in that 10-month period.
There is never a dull moment, especially with racing in Victoria as we build into the Spring Carnival. I'm interested to get your perspective of racing now and the industry compared to when you moved into the position 10 months ago. What's been the biggest eye-opener or the biggest change, do you think, in your perception?
Yeah, look, there's obviously been a lot of things that we've been focused on. We've had pretty well a completely new board, so getting new board members up to speed on what is really a very complex industry has obviously been a challenge. Literally weeks after I think we took our roles, we had the Aquanita case break, and obviously that took up a lot of time. We've had things like the point of consumption tax that was raised, and we obviously were fortunate enough to be able to consult very very well with the state government on that issue. That took a lot of time. We've had some key people changes, especially recently in the integrity area. We've had changes in integrity structures coming at us. Again, we've been consulting very heavily on that issue as well. We had to deal with things like prize money allocations, which is always interesting. Requests for $30 to $40 million of prize money challenges or changes when we've got about $10 million in the budget. So that's always interesting. Jockey EBAs, these sort of things. So there's been a lot going on. Having said that, I do think the industry's in great shape. When the new board took over, we were fortunate. We inherited Racing Victoria in very strong financial shape, and you'll hear something about our results in coming weeks, but again, we've had a very strong year and the balance sheet's in great shape. Importantly, our clubs are in good shape as well, so that's fantastic. We've had significant prize money increases, other statistics like our field sizes, our attendance, our ownership numbers are all looking really well. Having said all that, there's a lot of challenges, some of which I probably knew about before I took the role, but others we've learned on the way through. I think one of the big challenges is going to be maintaining our growth rates. We've done a great job, I think, increasing the amount of revenue to the industry coming from wagering, but I think that rate of growth is likely to slow for a number of reasons. There's obviously more to do on the integrity front, and you and I have spoken before about this. I think I believe we've got more to do on the education and cultural side of integrity, as well as the things you've been talking with Jamie Steer about in terms of technology and processes and those sort of things. Equine welfare, our license to operate, I knew was an issue, but it's obviously had a lot of publicity in recent days. And then finally, and one I know which is close to your heart and a lot of other people's hearts, is issues around participant welfare, which really, I'd have to say I had some inklings about before I took the role on, but clearly, we're now much more aware that it's a challenge we need to face and deal with. So sorry, that was a very long answer to your question.
Well, and you've covered a lot of the issues that we want to talk about, because there are so many issues. But in your role now as a chairman and your previous corporate career, where you were in charge of thousands of employees, is this a more difficult role, do you think? Are there more fractures? Is it tougher to get everyone on the one page in racing?
Interesting question. Look, my knee-jerk response to that would be, yes, it is. It's to answer that particular question about getting everyone on the same page, there's an enormous number of people that have got views and important views. And, sometimes it's difficult to bring all of those together and get everyone heading in the same direction. It was probably, I'd say, in my corporate career at Toll and previously at BlueScope, getting that everyone pulling in the same direction was something we spent a lot of time focusing on, and it's something you have to be successful at to have a successful company. And I do think, similarly in our industry, I mean, as I said, we're going really well, but if we want to sort of take it to the next level, I think getting everybody on the same page on some of those key issues I've spoken about is something we have to focus on.
Well, let's talk with the industry welfare to start with, because we just most recently had the jockey EBA, which it actually divided the industry, unlike what we've seen in recent times, where we had the jockeys v the trainers, owners, all publicly arguing with each other about who should get a bigger slice of the pie. And we did a little forum in here with the actual stable hands and the workers who are at the coalface and probably the worst remunerated in the industry. And I thought it was interesting the release that came out from Giles and Racing Victoria after the EBA got sorted, saying that we've taken on board that there needs to be more investigation and more thought about what we can do. So what's Racing Victoria's standpoint moving forward, and how can you try and make it better?
Yes, look, a couple of issues there. First of all, on the jockey EBA, the outcome that we ended up with there is one that we're very comfortable with. We did think the jockeys needed to be recognised for the extended working week, as we've introduced more twilight and night meetings in recent years. And to be frank, from an objective point of view, we want to make sure we've got the best jockeys in Australia racing in Victoria, and we want to be able to attract and retain the best jockeys. So, you know, we want to look after them as well as we possibly can. So overall, we were happy with that outcome. I think in terms of the other participants, it's not going to be an easy issue to solve. You know, we hear talk about need for increased pay, but there will be lots of other issues that are causing either us to lose people in the industry or not be able to attract people in the industry into those roles. Greg Carpenter's roles recently, I'm not sure whether you're aware, Greg Carpenter's roles recently has been expanded to look after participant welfare. He's already started the process of talking with the jockeys and the trainers and other stakeholders about this particular issue. And, you know, I'm hopeful that in coming months, Greg will be coming to us with a well-thought-through plan. But I think it won't just be the length of the working week for those people. It won't just be remuneration. I'm sure there'll be cultural issues around diversity and respect. There'll be issues around working conditions in stables that need to be dealt with. There'll be issues around the industry's reputation that are meaning people aren't even interested in coming to our industry for a job. So it won't be a single solution. I think there'll need to be a range of issues that need to be worked on. Importantly, we are absolutely aware of it. We know it's an issue we need to tackle, but we've got to do it in a way which is based on facts and data and evidence, and not just responding to individual opinions or views about what needs to be done to fix it.
Do you think jockeys are overpaid?
No, I don't. Not at all. They, I think they're appropriately remunerated. As I said earlier, we in Victoria do pay our jockeys better than anywhere else in the country. I'm happy with that. We've got to keep the gap manageable to the other states to be competitive. But I'm more than happy having our jockeys being the best remunerated, because for me that's one of the planks that's very important in us being able to attract and retain the best jockeys in the state.
The trainers say that they do it just as tough. The top trainers make a good living,
yep,
but there's very few of those. Do we have too many trainers, do you think?
Yeah, look, it's a good question. We've got 800 odd trainers, I think, in Victoria. My knee-jerk reaction to that question would be it sounds like too many. But, you know, it's part of the fabric of our industry that we have the trainer that has, you know, one or two or three horses. And, you know, you're talking about Yudita Clark before I came in. I mean, that's a fantastic story with her horse. I don't want to lose that by saying we need to, you know, remove the opportunity for those smaller trainers. But look, I guess the thing that we can do there is make sure we're giving them the right facilities to be able to train, or to give them the best opportunity for access to those facilities. Doing what we can on the prize money front, which is obviously where a lot of the remuneration for the trainers comes from. And then I guess the market, to some extent, will sort out what's the right number.
What about the future in regards to turnover? As you mentioned, that you think it's going to be difficult to continue an upward spiral, which will then have a trickle-down effect, prize money, yep, and keeping these industry participants well-paid and those who aren't at the pointy end as well. How much tougher is that going to be moving forward?
Yeah, so to be clear, my earlier comment, I still think we can grow, but we've had the rate of growth over the last 4 or 5 years in our income from wagering, whether that's through the joint venture or race fields fees with other wagering service providers, has grown really strongly. I just think with things like the point of consumption tax, like other regulations around credit betting and those sort of issues, I think we need to go in with our eyes open and an expectation that rate of growth is going to be difficult to maintain. I still think we can grow it. What does that mean for us? We need to be thinking about how we grow revenue from other sources. We've started, I think, to do a good job exploiting our media assets, but I'm convinced we can do more there. And then Giles and the team are working on a range of other initiatives where Racing Victoria can grow its revenue, so we can keep that prize money, those prize money increases coming.
What type of areas are you thinking of?
Oh, look, they're areas like, can we be doing, don't get too excited about this because the teams are still working on things, but things like consulting on wagering intelligence, those sort of things. So we've built a lot of expertise in some areas, and there are opportunities to exploit that and get some income from other areas. So that's just one example. But Giles, as I say, Giles and the team are working on a range of other initiatives.
There's been a lot of talk about this future fund or the war chest. Mm-hmm. How much does Racing Victoria actually have?
Yeah, so look, you'll see the detailed balance sheet when it comes out in a few months, but it's sort of circa $80 million.
And what is that sitting there for?
Yeah, look, it's a good question, and we get that question from the clubs fairly regularly, and I've had a lot of discussion with the chairman and the boards of the clubs about this issue. Having been on the committee at Moonee Valley, I was the one asking the questions not that long ago. But look, it's there for infrastructure requirements, which can be lumpy expenditures if they're needed. It's clearly there if we have a shock in a particular year in terms of the level of income from wagering, so that one of the things I don't think we want to do is to have to announce prize money decreases. So that fund is there in order to be able to maintain, at worst, maintain prize money. So there's an element of there for that. And look, they're probably a couple of the key issues. There are other uses that we've earmarked for that, but I think it's fair to say, and you can ask the clubs this question as well, that generally they're comfortable that the work we've done to assess what the magnitude of that surplus and money kept in or retained needs to be, they're comfortable that that magnitude is about right. So we've done a lot of work with them. To the extent where we've got more money than that, we will be looking at distributing that either to the clubs or in other ways. So, and that we've explained that to the clubs over recent months.
So in a really dumbed down question and answer, does Racing Victoria make much money each year, or is it all reinvested?
I hate it when people ask me that, because if I don't know the answer to that question, it won't be good. Sorry, I'll just repeat the question again for me.
So does Racing Victoria each year make a certain amount of money, or is it all reinvested back into prize money and infrastructure?
Okay, so look, we tend to aim for a small surplus, and by that I mean anywhere from sort of $2 to $10 million is what we aim for when we're pulling our budgets together. Now, clearly we don't know everything that's going to come at us in a particular year, and we can't be certain about levels of wagering income or costs or those sort of things. But that's the level of surplus that we aim to generate. And then to the extent we do better than that, then it will probably most likely result in an increase in prize money. So and or if the clubs have got a particular need for a project or something like that, then the money can be allocated in that direction as well.
Just got an SMS just on the jockey EBA. A lot of the dispute or the questions were around jump outs, mm-hmm. fees for unofficial trials. Yeah. How difficult would it be for Victoria to have official trials like Racing New South Wales has? How much more would that cost? Because that would then also alleviate a lot of issues punters have with the jump outs, not getting proper data and accurate information from those jump outs.
Yeah, look, so I think there is some work going on around compulsory televising of jump outs to deal with exactly the issue that you're talking about. Look, the jump outs question was an interesting one, and clearly I was involved in one meeting with Steve Baster and Maddie Hyland just to make sure they understood where the Racing Victoria board sat during the negotiations, and I had an opportunity to hear firsthand from them. And, they obviously had a couple of issues, one around the working week, which we understand and agree with. The jump outs one, fair enough to say, was there was a fair bit of debate around it in terms of, is a jump out more like an official trial or is it more like track work? And, one of the challenges for Racing Victoria as well was that we don't control the number of jump outs that are had. They're managed by the clubs, they're managed by individual trainers. So for us to be agreeing to payments for those particular issues when we've got no control over how many of them are run was obviously a challenge for us as well. So I think it's fair to say we probably agreed to disagree on the matter of payments for jump outs. But in terms of the working week, as I said, we absolutely agreed on that. And look, your question about more official trials versus more jump outs, I'm sure Greg Carpenter and his team are looking at that. Other than that, television cut or the coverage, video coverage of jump outs, I'm not aware of any other material changes that we're expecting to make.
Is that an area you think we need to improve on? Because that can have a flow-on effect to greater turnover.
Oh, in terms of televising jump outs?
As getting, yeah, more
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I'm very supportive of that. I think the, look, you know, you'll have some owners and trainers that won't want it being televised for obvious
reasons.
But have
we passed those days?
I think so. I'd like to think so. So, that doesn't mean we don't hear those arguments and those opinions. But I think, yeah, if you sit there with a what's in the best interest of the industry hat on, it's not hard to reach the conclusion that televising those jump outs is the right thing to do.
Last one on the jockeys. Yeah. The increase in prize money, it's a first of a three-year deal. Mm-hmm. What's the increases for the second and third year?
So the increases in the fees?
In increased fee, yeah.
So look, it's what I can tell you, it's significantly less than what we've talked about in year one. Now, I'll explain to you why I'm not answering that question directly. We're in other negotiations at the moment, so we're a bit cautious about being crystal clear with exactly all the terms of the jockeys' pay deal. I'll answer what I can for you, but if I'm sounding like I'm avoiding the question, it's because of those other negotiations going on at the moment. But what I can tell you is it's so, you know, we've got the increases have been announced in year one. Year two and three will be materially less than that, much closer to CPI type numbers.
Okay. Do we have an overall figure?
Well, I can tell you the jockeys have been communicated what it is. So, yeah, it's about 10.6% over the three-year period.
Okay. All right. Moving on to the TAB merger and the joint venture. Mm-hmm. And as you said, I suppose the struggles that we've got to continue the upward spiral, how much of an impact is this TAB merger going to have moving forward? And have we seen any changes as yet?
My understanding, talking with the team from Tabcorp, is that the merger is going well. We're seeing some benefits from that in terms of joint venture operating costs, but it's still not at the level that we would have expected when we had the discussions with Tabcorp initially during the merger negotiations. When they were undertaking the merger and wanting to get our support for it. But look, my understanding is it's going well. I think it's important that it's successful. Clearly, we're still, despite the fact we've been growing our revenue from other wagering service providers, the Tabcorp joint venture is still absolutely critical to the future of the industry, and we're keen to see it be very successful.
We see New South Wales seems to be ramping up their prize money. We know the Everest, the prize money they've got there. Are they in a better financial position than Victoria?
Good question. Look, I think the prize money one, it's difficult to get your head around exactly who's doing what on the prize money front. What I would say, one of the metrics that I look at is what's the average prize money per race. And it's fair to say my understanding is even after their latest increases, Victoria is still ahead of New South Wales in terms of the average prize money per race. Now, clearly we'll have different mixes around Saturday metros versus country cups versus, you know, listed and group three race, all these sort of things. But that key metric for me around average prize money per race, Victoria's still ahead even after the recent prize money increases. Your question around a New South Wales in a better position, look, Victoria's obviously in a good position. There are a couple of areas where we're doing some work to better understand how New South Wales arrangements with their point of consumption tax and how their arrangements with what they refer to as tax parity positions the New South Wales industry versus Victoria. The tax parity issue is not as straightforward as people like to make it sound, because it's really only one part of that story about returns to the industry. The other thing you need to look at is what are the terms of the license arrangements with Tabcorp in both states. New South Wales has a very different model for how they're returned money from Tabcorp. You need to look at that as well as the state government tax rates.
So they get a better return, do they?
It's different. And our early assessment would suggest that the tax rates coming down in New South Wales, together with the arrangements that they have with Tabcorp, actually does currently give them an advantage, or it certainly will as the tax rates in New South Wales come down over coming years, relative to where we are in Victoria. So that is obviously an area where we need to do some more work to make sure that what we think is happening is actually happening. And then clearly we've got some work, if that is the case, we've got some work to do to have some discussions with our state government.
You speak of the state government, the Racing Minister, Martin Pakula. There's an election coming up. There's been a few issues with the Racing Minister, Attorney General and other members of the government. From a racing perspective, where does that put racing when we come into a state election? We may have a new Racing Minister.
Yeah, look, I don't really want to comment on what the outcome of the election might be, but... look, what I will say, Martin's been fantastic support for the industry. He and for me personally, actually, obviously coming into the role as a new appointee, I couldn't have asked for more support from him across a whole range of issues. They have done a great job listening to us in areas like the point of consumption tax, like the new integrity structures. So it has been going well, I think. Now, having said that, clearly if the opposition, the current opposition, wins the election, then we would be hoping for the same level of support from the new government. But we'll see how all that plays out.
The new integrity bill was passed last week. Mm-hmm. I spoke to Martin Pakula on the show. Implementation by the new racing season, is that the plan?
Yep, that's my understanding, yep. And look, on that, I think we were... as I mentioned earlier, we were really happy with the level of consultation that we had with the state government. The most important outcome from my perspective and from our board's perspective was that Racing Victoria didn't lose control over the integrity services department and ultimate responsibility for integrity in racing. I know there was a lot of arguments about needing to separate the commercial interests and the integrity interests. I actually don't buy that argument at all. I think our board is crystal clear that if we don't get integrity right, that will absolutely be detrimental to the commercial results for racing. So we see those two as very aligned, that they're not actually in conflict with one another. And I've made that point very strongly during the discussions with the government about potential changes in the integrity structure. And I think they've listened. And we have retained primary responsibility. We're really happy with the changes that have been made. I think having a VRIB... got to get the right people on board, but having more input and direction and recommendations coming from that group, both to the Integrity Services Department and to the board, got no problems with that at all. I think hopefully it's an uplift or a positive thing. And finally, I think the streamlining of the appeals process is something we absolutely needed to do.
It will save money?
It will save money. It'll bring certainty quicker on issues. Clearly not everybody will be happy with that, but again, if you put the hat on that says what's in the best interest of racing overall, I think those changes are critical for us.
And are we going to see, and I've spoken to Jamie Steer about this, more video surveillance at racetracks so we don't have another Aquanita situation?
Yeah, look, I think that's obviously only one of the solutions, and the answer to that is yes, and Jamie and his team are working on a range of initiatives around technology and processes and all sorts of things to minimise the likelihood of those sort of things recurring. But as I said to you earlier, I think there's a lot of other areas we need to focus on to get the right outcomes on integrity, and it's around education and it's around culture. Mm. I often get asked what I mean when I talk about culture, and again, I think you and I might have had this conversation previously, but I must say I do get a bit annoyed when I hear people say, you know, this is racing, we'll always have integrity issues. We've got to have a mindset that zero is possible here, and you've got to go into it with that mindset. And it's, you know, if I use safety analogy, when I was working in places like Toll or Bluescoat, your mindset has to be that, you know, accidents don't just happen, that a zero outcome on safety is possible. We've got to have that same approach and mentality with integrity. We've got to have a culture where, you know, the responsibility for integrity doesn't just sit with Racing Victoria. Other participants have to step up and play a role. And we've got to have a culture where it's actually okay to call things out when you see them. You know, previously that's been seen as I don't want to dob on my mates or whatever. Yep. But if we're going to get to where we need to get to, some of those elements and a few other areas have to change.
And that also goes in hand with public perception. We saw a recent story on Four Corners a month or so ago, which was, it seemed a pretty loose type of story that just wanted to throw a few pot shots at the racing industry, but that unfortunately is what you're dealing with outside of the racing bubble.
Yep.
Where do you see the overall public perception of racing at the moment, and not just integrity but welfare?
Yeah, look, a really good question, and I'd have to say, you know, one of my learnings in the role has been that I think we do a pretty good job communicating what we're doing on those areas to people in the industry.
Yeah.
But we've really failed to get cut through in broader media to explain all of the great things that we're doing in the industry around integrity and around welfare and around a whole range of other issues. So I think that's one of our challenges over the next 12 months is to work out how we do a better job of that. I agree with you, the Four Corners story was a bit jumbled. There was really nothing new in there other than them raising issues around tongue ties. And
yeah,
from what I've seen and heard, you talk to the vets and provided they replied correctly, they're certainly not causing the horse any damage and, in fact, helping them to race as well as they possibly can. So, but putting that aside, there's no doubt we need to face up to the fact we've got to do a better job communicating with people outside the racing industry.
Is that an emphasis for Racing Victoria? And I know you've got a media call today, which is called 16 Hands, which is aiming at young kids, primary kids, getting them introduced to racehorses, the racing industry.
Yep.
Not from a punting perspective, but just the love of the animal. I was punting in primary school, but no. But from a perspective as that we need to get a wider, I suppose, footprint for those who may not even know racing exists.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I'm thrilled with the program. You know, we've talked a lot about what we can do from community relations, and this is one part of that. And we've been doing a lot of work, as you know, out in regional areas with Subby and Graham. And you know, what we're doing now is bringing that a similar program, 16 Hands, to the city. You know, I'm sure it'll be the first experience for a lot of school kids in the city being able to look at and pat a thoroughbred racehorse. And that's all about just improving the perception of the industry and what we do. And who knows, we might have some future trainers or jockeys coming out of some of these. Or administrators even coming out of some of these school visits.
No, I think it's a great inception, and Subby and Graham have led the way there. So it's great to see that we've got a new wave coming through as well. A couple of quick ones before I let you go, because I know you're a very busy man. Media, you mentioned media. We're starting to get some money back through the media, but you think there's a long way to go there. I've spoken to Peter Valandis about this in recent times. Are we any closer to getting more cooperation between New South Wales and Victoria from a vision perspective?
Yep.
Is there a one channel down the track?
Oh, that's probably a good question for Peter to answer, I suspect, given that I think TVN was no longer, once Racing New South Wales decided to head down a different path. But look, what I can say is Andrew Cattrall and the team at racing.com, I know, are talking with Racing New South Wales about opportunities on things like digital streaming, on archive vision sharing, and all those sort of things.
We need to get the replays.
We do absolutely need to get the replays. And my understanding, having had a recent sort of indirect briefing from Andrew, is that he's put some proposals to Racing New South Wales, and we're waiting to hear back from him. So we'll move forward as quickly as we can on those things. It needs to be mutually beneficial outcomes for both states and for punters, obviously. But I'd like to think we can get some good outcomes there.
And the issue that's raised its head this week, the Regumate issue, the Altrinogist for trying to stop mares becoming in season. Racing New South Wales has made a local law. We've called it the Winks Rule. Chris Waller's not too happy with that, but she's the most famous mare racing in Australia. Is there any movement from Racing Victoria on this type of medication and whether it'll be allowed to be used by trainers?
Well, look, I know you had a detailed conversation with Jamie Steer a day or two ago. I'm not sure how many of the listeners heard that, but we're trying to get to the bottom of what's caused the issue. Jamie and his team are obviously working with the manufacturers to try to understand that. We're obviously talking with trainers and vets and so on as well, so there's a lot of consultation
going on.
Spoken
to Chris?
Sorry?
Spoken to Chris
Waller? I'm not sure whether Jamie's spoken with Chris directly. I would, look, re-emphasise the point that Chris probably made to you, is it's not just about Winks. I mean, I understand she's the superstar, and we all want to see her come and race successfully in Victoria, or probably except for the other people that are racing against her. But it's not just about her. There's obviously a lot of other fillies and mares using this particular product, and what I can say is Jamie's team working on it with a real sense of urgency to try and get it sorted as quickly as possible, and I'm sure we'll have a solution in place, which means there's no sort of you know, material problems with any of our major races over coming weeks.
On a broader scale, is this the biggest issue that we have in racing, the lack of continuity, especially between states?
Yeah, look, I've heard that. I've again got a bit of a different view. I guess people that aren't sort of working behind the scenes don't understand the level of cooperation that does go on between the states. I mean, I can tell you that there's been a number of new rules that have either been introduced or about to be introduced at the next Racing Australia meeting where Victoria and New South Wales and other states are very aligned on those things. We do a lot of work on equine welfare issues together. Clearly, we do a lot of work on the Australian pattern together. So, you know, occasionally these things will come up where there'll be a different view or a different approach, but it's not like it's happening all the time, and it's certainly not, you know, for my position, it's sort of the exception and not the rule. And I know there's been questions around, can we streamline administration, have one national administration? I think that'd be really challenging. From a few points of view, one is you've got, you know, just the geographic spread of the country and the various issues that the different states are dealing with, but very different approaches by each of the state governments as well. I just think it may happen one day, but I think it's a long way away. And in the meantime, what we need to do is work together with the other states to make sure that we're making life as easy as possible for the participants that do move across the different states.
Brian, there's so much to talk about. We could go on, but we'll have another chat before we get really stuck into the spring carnival. The good horses are on the way back. And
very exciting few weeks coming up.
It certainly is. Yeah. Who's going to be the horse of the spring? Don't say
well,
weeks.
I'm hoping one of my unraced two-year-olds.
Have you got a cut? Who with?
I've got one with Danny O'Brien, one with Mick Price. So I was a bit upset Mick didn't mention our little two-year-old Lon Rofili earlier, but anyway. So, I've got small shares in a couple that'll be racing. We did have a double at Warwick Nabil earlier in the week, wife and I, which was good. So, things are going well, but I'm not sure they'll be racing in town in the spring.
Brian, great to have you in the studio. And as I said, thanks for opening up the door, so to speak, from Racing Victoria on a number of issues that are currently bubbling along in the industry. Enjoy the build-up to the Spring Carnival. We'll speak to you before the good horses really do come back.
Thanks a lot, Michael.
Brian Kruger, the chairman of Racing Victoria. We're going to take a short break. You're listening to Racing Pulse. It is 22 minutes to 10. On the other side of this, it is the Trial Files with Maddie Welsh. And don't forget, a new segment, the Snow Report with Tab Sally Snow, telling us why certain horses have been put up as favourite by the Tab, and who have been the best backed.